The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. Sam, another J1 weekend in the books, and it was a relatively quiet one with one very notable exception.
Yeah, it was pretty quiet. I'm pretty happy it was quiet because with the ACL going on at the same time, it has a lot of work to do. So it's all right if the J-League wants a quiet weekend or two for the next couple of weeks.
Indeed, indeed. So, yeah, lots of goals for Kashima against Urawa. We'll come on to that game shortly. And the rest of the J1 Matchday 30 fixtures played over the weekend. But, hot off the presses is the ACL, of course. The game's going on over in Qatar at the moment. And as we record on Monday night, one involving one of the J1 clubs has just finished. Unfortunately for FC Tokyo, it's another defeat, their second out of three games over in Qatar, and it came against the Group F leaders Ulsan. Tokyo made the perfect start to put it mildly, with Kensuke Nagai firing in just the first minute. But late goals in either half, Sam, have put paid to Tokyo on this occasion, and not quite a death knell for them in the competition, but it's going to be difficult to see them qualifying from here.
Yeah, they're now looking for help from either Perth Glory, who were already eliminated and not really taking this competition too seriously, and Ulsan, who are already through and probably will be, already confirmed as group winners. So, yeah, it's not looking too hopeful for them. It started so well, this game, Nagai's goal inside 2 minutes. And there were chances where Tokyo had possession, they had counter-attacks, but there was just the indecision at the final moment. They didn't get the shot away in time, and they were made to pay by two bits of terrific player from Yumbit Garam. The free kick was fantastic to equalise. Second one, he is helped out by some fairly passive defending, but he got the shot away. And also, they're a team you can't allow to stay in the game, and Tokyo didn't kill them off when they were at their best, and also, made them pay and are rightfully probably the group winners from Group F.
Yes, and Tokyo supporters need some help from Perth Glory and or Ulsan, but with the Shanghai Shenhua of the Chinese Super League playing Ulsan in the final game, Sam, we would expect Ulsan to rest the majority of their starters. As you say, they're confirmed through as group winners already, and also because they won't want to risk a similar injury to that suffered by the Tokyo striker Diego Oliveira shortly after halftime in the rematch against Shanghai, where Diego was basically commonly assaulted.
Oh, it was unbelievable, that challenge. He's nowhere near the ball. It's King Cheng, I think it is, from Shenhua. He's not attempting to play the ball. He just goes studs in on the back of the calf of Diego. It's a terrible tackle. The referee sees it, and how he can award just a yellow card is beyond me. It is just a red card, clear as day. Hopefully, Diego Oliveira is okay. I know he was spotted at the ground today, but I think the reports were yesterday that he was wheelchair-bound for a while, so hopefully, once the swelling goes down, he can get that scanned and it's not too serious. But yeah, a horrible tackle, and Ulsan won't want to be risking any of their key players against such disgusting football from Shanghai Shenhua.
Indeed, and yeah, I saw a clip of Diego basically hopping to his seat in the stands to watch the game tonight. So yeah, he certainly doesn't appear very mobile at all. And that injury soured what was an impressive fight back from Tokyo after they had been so poor in the first game against Shanghai. Tokyo won 2-1 last Friday thanks to goals from Leandro and Shuto Abe. And that was the only win of the three for J1 clubs in the second lot of fixtures over in Qatar, as they basically flipped the results from the first round, as Kobe and Yokohama F. Marinos both lost to their Chinese opponents after winning at the first time of asking. Kobe fell 2-0 to two first-half goals by Guangzhou Evergrande, and after winning at the death in the first clash, Yokohama F. Marinos lost 2-1 to Shanghai SIPG. The Chinese club had taken a 14th minute lead. Ado Onaiwu equalised for F. Marinos in the 21st minute, but Ricardo Lopez got the winner for SIPG 10 minutes into the second half. So for Kobe and F. Marinos, Sam, we already knew that Kobe were through after their first victory over Guangzhou, but they still obviously would like to top the group. So those two results from Saturday then are slightly disappointing ones for the J1 clubs that they didn't build on their successes first time round?
Well, I think so, especially for Kobe, because they've come into the resumption of the competition in such poor form. I think it was 5 losses on the bounce. To get a really good result against Guangzhou, you'd think maybe they want to go on from that, seal top spot in the group and really build some confidence. But yeah, they made 11 changes. They obviously were not bothered by what this result was. They were through. That's all they kind of cared about. And yeah, they were deservedly beaten in this one. Maybe they're looking at the group they're paired with and you're going to play one of Yokohama, Shanghai or Jeonbuk, and they're thinking, oh, it doesn't really matter. They're all good sides. They're not going to overexert their players to finish first rather than second. So I guess that was the way they were looking at it. And Yokohama also rotated quite heavily. I think there was 8 changes for them. It was a more even game. I think Yokohama's reserves, it still included Nakagawa coming in from the start. Onai was a good striker. So they still had good players out there. It was a more even game. It was the same, really, as the opening game, where there wasn't much to split the two sides. I thought either result could have gone either way, if you know what I mean. So I don't think they'll be too disappointed. They know they've got games against Jeonbuk and Sydney. They don't need to do too much to qualify. So I think they feel they're in a reasonable position and they've got their players enough rest that hopefully they'll be fit and firing come the latter stages of the competition.
Righty-o then. So yeah, Tokyo have 1 game left to play. That is on Thursday against the already eliminated Perth. But they will need help from Perth in their clash against Shanghai. That is probably going on as we record on Monday night. While in Kobe and F. Marinos' groups, Kobe get to have this midweek off and get to watch Guangzhou and Suwon, hopefully for them, knock the stuffing out of each other before Kobe play their final group stage game on Friday against Suwon. That is, of course, because the Malaysian team from Group G, JDT, were forbidden to travel to Qatar, so they have withdrawn from the competition, and therefore Kobe get the midweek off. While in Group H, F. Marinos' group, as Sam's mentioned, they've got to play Jeonbuk, which is on Tuesday, and then already eliminated Sydney FC on Friday. F. Marinos top the group currently jointly with SIPG on 9 points, and Jeonbuk, well, they'll be fighting for their lives on Tuesday. A draw for F. Marinos there would be enough to see them qualified and see Jeonbuk knocked out. All right, so obviously we'll round up those final group stage games in next week's episode. And, that's our look at the ACL then. So turning our attention back to J1. And in case you missed it, well, you can pause this podcast now and go back and listen to our one from last Friday to discover who won the J1 championship last midweek. Spoiler alert, it was Kawasaki Frontale, and we celebrated their amazing feat with Neil Debnam. Re-recorded on Thursday after giving Neil the proper time to celebrate Frontale's title. And then, the podcast went up on Friday. So if you've not listened to that, it is a good one, a celebration of Frontale's title. And, the Frontale had the weekend off, so goodness knows what they got up to celebrating their historic season. They've still got a few games left to play, but yes, they were inactive on the weekend. And I don't know, Sam, how are you feeling? Do you want to start on a positive or a slightly negative note as we round up the other 6 match day 30 fixtures?
I think we'll try and keep it as positive as possible for as long as we can.
All right. Well, so 4 of the teams in the battle for a second spot and also the ACL places were at home in match day 30. So we'll begin at the Yanmar Stadium then, where Cerezo Osaka continued their push for a top 3, perhaps even a top 2 finish with a 1-0 victory over Yokohama FC. This was a reasonably entertaining game, I would say, Sam, for a Cerezo game in recent times. There wasn't a lot happening in the first half hour, but Kim Jin-hyun in the Cerezo goal did have to make a brilliant low save just before the half hour after a deep free kick from out on the right, almost snuck in at the far post after taking a slight deflection. And then Kosuke Saito and Maguinho fired wide before the break as the visitors, Yokohama FC, enjoyed the better of the first half chances. Cerezo stirred to life after the break, and Yuji Rokutan saved from Mata Jonic and Bruno Mendes headers before the Brazilian frontman glanced in a terrific Nagasawa-esque header from Eiichi Katayama's cross in the 61st minute. So Yokohama FC had their moments here, Sam, but Cerezo, I guess, did just enough and won 1-0 for the second straight game.
Yeah, just enough is pretty much right. The first half, it was fairly even, I'd say, in terms of possession, but the better chances did go to Yokohama. That save you mentioned from Kim, when it just the free kick hit Ichimi, and he knows nothing about it, but it's going right in the bottom corner, and he does terrifically to claw that away. And it kind of spurred Yokohama on. They were quite energetic, I'd say. They were playing it around Cerezo. The two Saitos were very good, very lively, and Maguinho as well. He got forward well. He got went close with his effort, but they didn't. Other than the one save that Kim had to make, which was not really a shot, they didn't really trouble him too much. And Cerezo got through that period pretty well. And second half, they went up a couple of gears. They looked to control the ball a lot more. They worked well with the set pieces. That's where they kind of. They get a lot of joy from set pieces. They work them well. The goal comes from a nicely worked short corner. Bruno Mendes gets himself a little bit of space. Good, yeah, it's a good header. And really, once Cerezo get in front, they're a team that can defend very well. They didn't really concede too many chances to Yokohama after that. They were always in control. And it's, yeah, fairly morale-boosting way to actually see off a game, because in recent weeks, they've been a little shaky at times. They've lost a few too many games. So this, as well as the Oita result in midweek, it kind of gives them that platform to go again in this ACL race, because maybe last week we were thinking they might be the team that drops off.
Indeed, yeah. Suddenly it appears they're half decent again after, as we said, two straight 1-0 wins. But while things have turned around on the pitch, Sam, it appears that the natives at the Yanmar Stadium are getting a bit restless over the club's decision not to keep their manager, Mr. Latina, on for 2021.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. In terms of the results that he gets at Cerezo and the position that they are in the league, I think he's done a very good job. And you can see why the supporters would be annoyed to get rid of him. They look like they're trying to go to a manager that might play a bit more of an attacking or an expansive style of football. And there's the banner that was put out as like asking the board, what do you want, 3 points or 3 goals? Which is basically saying, do you want to just forget the points that we're winning just to play more exciting football? Which is an interesting stance, because other supporters might go the other way and want their team to play better football. But it's getting them results, and Cerezo have been a team. I think that drop into J2 might have affected the fans, and now they're just looking like a solid team that is always going to be there or thereabouts. They're pretty happy with that. So I think it would be weird to change the manager. I'm sure there's still time for them to rethink this and maybe go back to Latina and offer him a new contract. But yeah, I think it's a strange risk that they're taking in changing manager.
Indeed, and I mean a very real possibility that they'll finish second, Sam, because they appear to have clicked back into a little bit of form, as we say, with the two straight wins, and they've got games in hand on all of the teams above them, and they trail second place Gumba by 4 points with a game in hand on them. And Gumba, as we'll come on to, obviously after getting battered by Kawasaki last midweek, they didn't do their chances of finishing second too much good on Sunday themselves. So We'll see, and whether the Cerezo board will have a change of heart, it's probably unlikely. But Mr. Lotina keeps Cerezo plugging along for now, and they're well and truly in with a shot of an ACL place, and as we said, even finishing second. So a 1-0 win for Cerezo over Yokohama FC, and we teased it in the open. Kashima Antlers, well, they bounced back from a midweek hammering of their own. When they were turned over at home 4-1 by Kashiwa Reysol by very much flipping the script and battering Urawa Sam 4-0. A brace here for ASA Wada. Yet another goal for Everaldo before Leo Silva applied the finishing touch. So what a way to bounce back. And, the second half was very much one-way traffic. After it appeared that Reds were finding their feet in the game in the latter stages of the first half.
Yeah, I thought the first half was quite even. Kashima did start very well. And obviously, the result in midweek would have stung and they would have been sent fired up to start this game. The goal they scored, the Ueda diving header, it's a superb cross first and foremost from Everaldo. Those two have really formed a really good partnership in the last month or so. And Ueda gets this diving header. I love a diving header. And he plants it into the bottom corner. It was a terrific goal. But Urawa did gradually get into this game. They didn't necessarily create too many chances. I think there was one header from Kuroki that went over. Then right at the end of the half, Martinez, who another one who's been released, even though he's been probably one of Urawa's better players this season, he clipped the outside of the post. So it looked like going into the second half that Urawa were the team in the ascendancy, but they just didn't turn up second half, and Kashima just tore them apart. They were fantastic. Ueda got his second, another quite poor defending from Urawa. They sat back off him and he let fly from the edge of the area into the bottom corner. The third goal is dreadful from Urawa. I mean, Aoki is in midfield. He's not looking. He plays a blind, lazy pass to Alano, who sets up Everaldo, and he's never going to miss one-on-one. And then, they finished it off with neat play between Leo Silva and Shoma Doi, and, Leo Silva made it 4-0. It was so comfortable in the end for Kashima. Another pretty terrible performance from Reds, but, Kashima back with a bang. They need to win out if they've got a chance of finishing in the top three, maybe top four. But then this was a perfect way to answer any critics that were coming their way after the result against Kashiwa.
Most definitely. And it just appears that they're going to run out of games, doesn't it, Sam? Because they've only got two left and they sit fourth on 55 points, a point behind Nagoya and four behind Gumba, having played a game more than both of those teams. So, as you say, they definitely have to win the last two, and with the Cerezo level on points with them breathing down their necks, then it looks that, well, I would suggest that fourth is the best they can do, but if we've done that game enough justice, and a thoroughly dominant performance, especially in the second half from Antlers, then we can move on to the teams in second and third, because Sam, they'll absolutely be kicking themselves after missed opportunities to strengthen their cases for top three finishes. Gumba obviously came into this game at home against Tosu, stinging after that 5-0 defeat at Kawasaki on Wednesday. And, whether there was a bit of a hangover from that, they were still punch drunk. Tosu took an 11th-minute lead when 18-year-old Ryunosuke Sagara scored his first J1 goal in what I believe was his first ever J1 start, when he ran on to Yuta Higuchi's scooped ball over the top and held off Ryu Takao before tapping in from 2 yards out. And, obviously Gumba had their moments in this game, Sam, but it took until the 77th minute. It must be said, Park Il-gyu did have to make a number of excellent saves in between the two goals in this game. But, a lovely backheeled finish from Patrick after he had raged a bit of a personal battle against Park, but couldn't find a way past him until, his goal with 13 minutes to go, finishing from Ryu Takao's low-driven cross. But then even after they'd equalised Gumba, they could have gone behind again after a tremendous, amazing dribble from Ryoya Morishita from, deep in his own half. He dribbled all of 50-plus yards before setting fly and just missing to Masaaki Higashiguchi's left-hand post. Then Park saved again from Patrick before the substitute Shoji Toyama had Gumba's last clear chance but shot straight at Tosu's on-loan goalkeeper. So, yeah, Gumba can only see this as a missed opportunity, Sam. Firstly, to bounce back, obviously, from Wednesday. But, yeah, they've got second spot to nail down here, and they could have taken huge strides towards doing that. But at the end of the day, it's not happened for them.
Yeah, they'd have had to have seen a home game against Sagan Tosu as one that they should be winning. I think the one positive I'd take away from this is they got the point in the end, and it keeps them 4 points above Cerezo, so Cerezo can't leapfrog them with their game in hand, so that could prove crucial in the end. I agree with you, I think they started a little bit with a hangover from midweek. They were second to a lot of balls first 15-20 minutes. Tosu themselves had made quite a few changes, actually, and it was with Sagara coming in for his debut. It shows that they were not necessarily playing their full-strength team, but it was one that was really up for it. They were pressing high. They deserved their goal when they got it, and it took Gamba a little while to get into this game. They had a few chances. Park, as you mentioned, was in very good form. He made a number of saves, but it just... as the game went on, it looked less and less like Gamba were going to actually get this goal. And it took a little bit of quality from Patrick, his wonderful flick that got Gamba back into it. And then they pressed as the end the game ended, but they made their changes. And because of the lack of players that they've got with the injuries, the players that they bring in on, as good as Toyama and Tsukamoto have been for the under-23s, it's difficult for them to be thrown into such an important game. And when Toyama had his chance to win it and become the hero, it kind of froze. It was a pretty tame shot at the goalkeeper. And maybe if it was Usami who was still on the pitch, then maybe things would have been different. But I think you maybe give credit to Gamba for being able to bounce back from the result in midweek and going 1-0 down. And that, yeah, they kept fighting. They got something out of it. But yeah, it's 2 points dropped, and it could prove crucial, especially in the race for second place.
Indeed, and just looking at the table, Sam, it's pretty remarkable, isn't it, that the team in second, having won 18 games, drawn 5 and lost 8, has a goal difference of only +3, doesn't it? I mean, I know they've obviously been battered twice in their last 4 games by Shun Nagasawa's Vegelta Sendai, and also, of course, by the champions, but by an aggregate of 9-0, of course, and that obviously that knocks your goal difference, no question. But it's just a little bit of a strange thing to see when you look up right up at the top of the table, and you see just a +3 there. I mean, that's not quite good enough for the team in second.
No, I would say that it just shows that they've been able to win tight games and just kind of get through games when they're not necessarily playing well. I think Higashiguchi has bailed them out a few times, but they haven't necessarily played too well. I mean, it's difficult because they've had such good results, and I think they've defended well. I don't think they're necessarily the most expansive of the side. If you look at Kawasaki and Yokohama, and even kind of what Kashima are doing, they're not at that level in terms of an attacking force. But I just think defensively they've just done enough to squeak over. And I think it says something about the character of the side to be able to win so many games 1-0 or 2-1. So I think it is as weird as it is to see a +3, I don't think it's necessarily indicating that they've been a poor side. I just think they've had to work a lot harder for their victories than maybe some other teams.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, they obviously go on an extremely lengthy unbeaten run, didn't they? It was 12 games, I think, wasn't it? And they have proven very hard to beat. And obviously, if you win 5 games in a row, but then you lose 1-5-0, well, then obviously, your goal difference is going to take a battering. And it's not really a dig at Gumba. It's just I found it quirky to notice that. But then obviously, those two recent results have really knocked their goal difference around. And there are other clubs around them, of course, who have goal difference in the single digits as well. So, just a strange thing to see when you look that high up the table. But, so very much a missed opportunity for Gumba at home against Tosu on Sunday, especially after the team closest to them, Nagoya, had also drawn at home on Saturday, and Grampus were held at 0-0 by Oita, or, well, depending which way you slice it, and Nagoya either earned a point in the 0-0 home draw against Oita, or were held by Trinita. There were chances at either end here, Sam, but ultimately, in a similar vein to Gumba, it's just a huge missed opportunity for Grampus here, especially after they had come in on the back of two straight wins.
Yeah, Nagoya didn't get going in this game. I thought they came up against an Oita team that played just as well in this game as they did against Kawasaki. Very well organised at the back. Gave up a couple of chances, but nothing that was a clear-cut one. Nothing that you'd say, oh, they had to score that one. And then at the other end, they caused a few problems. There was one header, I forget who it was, apologies to him, but it was a low header that Langerak has to make a terrific save one-handed down to him. It was right in injury time, and they had other chances. Hoshi had a diving header at the back post. I think Chinen had another shot, but easily saved by Langerak. And Langerak was definitely the busier of the goalkeepers. And Nagoya were trying to rely on Mateus to come up with something special, and on this occasion, he wasn't able to. The closest he came was, I think it was the 96th minute in the end when he had a shot, but straight at Takagi. And really, Nagoya just, yeah, didn't create enough. There wasn't enough from Maeda, didn't really turn up. Abe didn't really turn up. And it was just a case of they were all looking to Mateus, what can you do? And, yeah, he wasn't able to on this day. And, yeah, Nagoya will see that as a missed opportunity because they'd come in off some reasonable form and thought they might go on, but this is the J-League. No one stays in form for too long. So they, yeah, 2 points dropped, and it really bunches everyone up in this race for the Emperor's Cup and the ACL places.
Most definitely. And I wouldn't say I'm 100% certain, Sam, but I reckon it was Yuto Misao who had that header that was, as you say, brilliantly saved down low by Mitch Langerak. On the highlights, I reckon I just spotted a 3 on the front of his kit. So if it wasn't Yuto, well, we're giving him credit for it. And, he can hang that up on his wall. So, Oita gave as good as they got here, but, it ended at 0-0. So draws for the teams in second and third, and wins for the teams in fourth and fifth, who incidentally switched spots in the table after Antlers' huge win over Reds. That saw them climb above Cerezo and into fourth on goal difference. But as we've said, games are running out for Antlers as they push for a top three, or perhaps even a top four if one of the J1 clubs wins the Emperor's Cup to get into the ACL next year. All right, well, we've covered those four teams then, Sam. So that only leaves us with two more games to cover, and they were both also drawn. On Saturday, Hiroshima hosted Sapporo. Just past the half hour, Tsukasa Morishima drew a flying save from Takanori Sugano in the visiting goal. His blast from 25 yards was batted away by Sugano. But 3 minutes before half-time, Sapporo's set-piece master, Akito Fukumori, was at it again. Sam, I'll leave it to you. I know you love this fella. Yet another brilliant free kick.
Oh, it was pretty much like a penalty, a free kick on the edge of the area for Fukumori. I mean, you just knew when he was stepping up to it that it was going in. And he bends it over the wall, just kisses the underside of the crossbar. Yeah, no real chance for Hayashi to keep it out. It was just another fantastic free kick goal from Fukumori. It's just wonderful left foot. He's got the best set pieces in the league, and he showed it again here and with the second goal.
Absolutely, yes. He was at it again, curling in a corner. 8 minutes after half-time, that Hiroki Miyazawa met with a firm header from inside the six-yard box to make it 2-0 to the visiting Sapporo side. But Hiroshima's fight back began just a minute later. Leandro Pereira firing under Sugino's dive after a lovely square pass from Yuya Asano. Douglas Vieira came on straight after Hiroshima's first goal, and just 3 minutes later, he swept home the equaliser after Yuki Nogami did superbly to win the ball back just inside the Sapporo half, and Hayao Kawabe played the ball through for the striker to run onto. Sugino saved at close range from Asano inside the last 10 minutes, but chances sort of dried up towards the end of the game, Sam. So, pretty tidy goals on display here for the punters at the Edion Stadium, and from the highlights at least, 2-2 looked like a fair result. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think so. It was all about a kind of mad 10 minutes at the start of the second half after Sapporo had gone 2-0 up. But I mean, I looked away for, I think it was only a couple of minutes watching the Nagoya game, and then suddenly it was 2-2 and I had no idea what had happened. But yeah, I mean, it looked like Sapporo just forgot that they would have to defend. They got dragged all over the place by some good work, admittedly, from Sanfrecce, but it ended up with Fukumori, the left centre-back, playing. It was over at right-back, and no one was in the centre for Leandro Pereira's goal, and it was just a fairly similar situation for Douglas Vieira's goal. And then I think Sasaki had a chance, and it was all within this quick period of play where Sanfrecce had almost gone from 2-0 down to 3-2 up, but other than that, the game did calm down, and it was a very even game, I thought. I don't think anyone from either side would argue with a 2-2 scoreline.
All right, so yeah, these two teams, separated by a number of spots in the table, but on this performance at least, fairly level. The Sanfrecce actually moved above Yokohama F. Marinos and up to seventh. With their point, and Sapporo stay down in 13th. So we're to the final game then, and it was the fourth draw out of six played over the weekend in J1. Shimizu 1, Shonan 1. The closest either team came to a goal in the first half was when Yusuke Goto's low shot for the hosts clipped the post on its way out of play a minute before the break. But the visitors took the lead just before the hour when a corner was headed towards goal and Hiroto Nakagawa swept home on the turn at Takuo Okubo's near post. 5 minutes later, S-Pulse were level when El Seno crossed from the right and S-Pulse player of the season, Carlinhos' first-time shot, took a deflection off Hirokazu Ishihara to leave Belmare's debutant goalkeeper Masaaki Goto no chance. So, Shimizu games have been fairly entertaining pretty much all season long, Sam. There were, decent number of chances at either end. But, 1-1 it finished and seemed pretty much fair play from the highlights.
Yeah, you're never going to get a poor game, I don't think. Maybe poor in terms of quality, but it's going to be fairly exciting. It wasn't first half, as you said. There was only really that one chance. But second half, both teams went for it. I think the Shonan took their goal very well, the spin from Nakagawa. And then Shimizu, it was well worked. I think Carlinhos gets lucky with the deflection, but when you're player of the season, you make your own luck. So I think he just about did that. And 1-1 was a fair result. It's a shame for a neutral anyway that this game is played in a season when there's no relegation, because this would have been a fantastic 6-pointer if it was, but as it was just two teams playing decently. They both went for it, and draw I think again was a fair result in this one.
Rightio, and speaking of players of the season, Sam, our pick last week for Shonan's player of the season was their goalkeeper Corsetani, and he wasn't involved in the squad on Sunday. So what do you reckon? Did he go out on the source to celebrate his title, his J-Talk Player of the Season title, and might have been punished by the boss? Or did I miss an injury in the build-up? Or was he just, I don't know, was he off on his jollies? Or what's up with him?
Could be anything. Perhaps Gamba heard us and thought, we've got to get him back at our club straight away.
Yes, indeed.
He's not saying a show now. So, I'm not sure what it was. I hope it was an over-exuberant celebration of his award.
We like to think so. All right, then. So, just the six games to review from the weekend, then, as we said, and four draws. So, we'll take a quick break then before we continue our Players of the Season series and then look ahead to the week in J1. Back in just a moment. Welcome back. And after the rave reviews for the first installment of our J1 Players of the Year feature, we're back with four more clubs this week. That's because I've worked out we're going to run out of match day, Sam. So we need to cram a few more clubs in to each episode to make sure that we get to the top three after the last match day of the season. So today we'll be discussing our shortlists and giving our player of the season award to players from Yokohama FC, Tosu, Sapporo and Kobe. So basically we're working our way up from the foot of the table. And so we will begin with the currently 15th placed Yokohama FC, Sam, and the three names on our shortlist from the sky blue half of Yokohama are Yusuke Matsuo, who scored 7 goals in his 20 appearances before a shoulder injury ended his season. Tatsuki Seko, who has made 29 appearances for Yokohama FC. And on loan fullback Maguinho, who is, of course, on loan from Kawasaki. He has made a total of 21 appearances this season. So, Yokohama FC, they've entertained at times, Sam. The results obviously haven't, really gone their way in too many occasions this season. But we've kind of said throughout that they could use this season as basically a free hit, to borrow a T20 cricketing term. And, there are three. I'm pretty sure we're going to be unanimous in our vote, but maybe do you want to start from Maguinho and work your way up our list before we get to our eventual winner?
Yeah, sure. I've really enjoyed watching Yokohama FC this year. There was the fear that maybe their old guys would just be trotted out every game and we might not get the exciting football that we have. But yeah, I think all three of these have contributed to that. I think Maguinho has had like a retribution year, if you want to say that. Didn't really get the game time at Kawasaki last year, so he's gone out on loan here. I think he's been a very good pickup for Yokohama, right back or right wing back. He's not afraid of getting forward. He can get back and defend as well. I think his final delivery has improved this season. And I think, yeah, he's proven himself to be a very good right back when Mr. Oniki didn't quite fancy him at Kawasaki. So I think he's been a driving force down that right-hand side, kind of made up for the lack of Nakayama, who's missed most of the season through injury. So I think, yeah, he's had a very good season. In midfield, I'd go with Tatsuki Seko. I think has been, yeah, really good. He's only 22. He's quite adaptable. He can play central midfield. He's nipped in at right back occasionally. He's played on the wing. But yeah, he's a really good player. He's doesn't do anything too fancy necessarily, but he keeps everything ticking over. I think he's, yeah, kind of the engine in that midfield, kind of, because they've got Tezuka, who really plays as the holding midfielder, so Seko's kind of the link. I think, yeah, he's technically very good. I've really enjoyed watching Seko. I think he's going to be one that moves on, maybe not next season, but the season after. I think he's got a place, a team at a better J-League club than Yokohama FC. And then I don't think there's going to be much argument from anyone that Matsuo is probably the player of the season for Yokohama FC. I mean, he's been absolute revelation. One of the best left wingers that we've seen in the league. He's probably a contender for some people's team of the season overall. I just think he's got absolutely everything on that left wing. He can take on a player. He can cross the ball. His finishing is superb. He's been fantastic. It's such a shame that he's missed the last month or so with injury, and really hope that he can get back into the team as the season winds down. Any arguments for you, or do you just want to throw a bit more praise Matsuo's way?
Yeah, no argument at all. Yeah, absolutely fantastic. He's glittered like few others have this season, really. I mean, absolutely sensational. A couple of standout performances, a brace in the 4-2 home win over Shonan back in August. But I guess his signature performance, Sam, will end up being the brace in the 2-0 away win over Urawa at the end of September. A Saitama native, of course, Matsuo. Mm. And, to do what he did on that big stage against the club he grew up the closest to is, just a massive, massive achievement. And where will he go from here? Well, we don't know, but Yokohama FC supporters have had a real gem on their hands this season. You'd love to think that he'd stay there for next season and maybe look to move on to a bigger club, or perhaps even try his luck overseas after another season or two. But, no arguments from me. An absolutely sensational season. As you say, such a tragedy, really, that, we've been deprived of him for the last month or so. But if he's able to make it back in the last few weeks, then that would be terrific. But without question, the J-Took player of the season for Yokohama FC is Yusuke Matsuo, and very well deserved, son. All right, we'll move up the table. And, well, yeah, players for Sagan Tosu. Well, as an FC Tokyo supporter, it's a bit painful for me to have to go through the Tosu squad because they handed FC Tokyo our lunch in both games this season. Tosu were excellent in those two games. Elsewhere, they've flattered to deceive at times, as they want to do. But, we've got three pretty interesting names here, and a chat in the green room suggests that opinion might be divided amongst your faithful co-hosts on who might get this award for Sagan Tosu. So I'll work out my way down the list as we discussed it, Sam. And the first name is Daichi Hayashi, who has obviously garnered a reputation this season as Sagan's super sub. He has 8 goals, which leads the club, and 5 of those have come in substitute appearances. So, Hayashi has started on the bench in the majority of games, I believe. But, yeah, he's made an impact off the bench in many of them. A mainstay for Tosu, either in the central midfield or in the centre of defence, is Daiki Matsuoka. He's at 28 appearances this season, leads the club. And his occasional partner in central defence, Eduardo, who has made 18 appearances this season, the former Kawasaki centre-back, of course, and he was elsewhere as well. I can't remember where, Sam. You might be able to refresh my memory. But Eduardo was he was out from mid-September to late October and missed a total of 11 games and was an unused sub in the first game he was back available for. And in those games, Tosu did ship a number of goals and they've righted the ship somewhat since his return. So perhaps I'm a victim here, Sam, of only watching the highlights of Tosu games. So Hayashi, he's always highlighted when he comes on, and oftentimes he does make an impact with a goal off the bench. So with fairly slim pickings, and again, not wanting to denigrate Tosu too much, because as I said, they beat my team home and away this season. But I'm leaning Hayashi here, simply for the fact of his weight of goals in a very goal shy club.
Yeah, I think he's a good pick. I think Hayashi kind of came into his own when Tosu came back after their COVID break, and then, as you say, off the bench, he looks a very good player, actually. He's quite strong, physically able, he's got good movement, his finishing is decent, and he's got his goal, so I can't argue with you in terms of him being a very important player for Tosu this season. But for me, I'd have to go with Eduardo. I just think, if you look at the defensive record that Tosu have, they've only conceded 38 goals, which is better than Gamba Osaka. It's a lot better than everyone else around them, and the bulk of those goals were conceded when Eduardo wasn't there. I mean, there was a 4-3 loss to Tosu. They conceded 3 to Yokohama, 3 to Sanfrecce Hiroshima. So I think he's been superb there. He came from Matsumoto, where he'd missed a lot of last season through injury, and it was just, we weren't really sure, I wasn't, what sort of player he was going to be, because I remembered him at Kawasaki, and at Kashua he's played there as well as a good defender. And yeah, he started the season superbly. You might remember a few internet gifs that went around of his hooked clearance off the goal line, and it just kind of showed what an important player he was, and he was putting his body on the line. I thought Tosu have really done well this season, a lot better than I especially and everyone else, I think, thought they would do. And I think it's a lot down to how well they defended. And it's been, Eduardo's been the key player at there, because he's not playing with recognised professionals, really. I mean, that's harsh, I mean. But Morishita came in from university. Turiki Hara's only 22. Daiki Miya's only 24. So he's not playing with anyone with much J-League experience. So he's guided them, and to a very respectable defensive record. So for me, and I don't know if I could pull rank if I have that authority, but I'd go Eduardo over Hayashi.
Fair play, Sam. Yeah, as I say, you see Tosu a lot more than I do, in a lot more detail. You have to sit through a lot, so yeah, you're more than entitled to make your pick. So we'll award the JTalk Player of the Season to Eduardo from Sagan Tosu. So congratulations to yet the big Brazilian. Well done, sir. And, yeah, he'll be looking to finish off the season in fine fettle. And, yeah, thanks for reminding me, Sam. It was Matsumoto where he had last played. All right, well, next to we'll head up from Tosu, one of the southernmost clubs in J1, up to the northernmost at Consadole Sapporo. We have three names for you from there. Their top scorer in the league is Anderson Lopez. He has 8 goals in 21 appearances this season. At the other end of the pitch, Takanori Sugino has made 25 appearances between the sticks. And Akito Fukumori, who we mentioned, of course, in part one, the wand of a left foot, has 2 goals this season, and both have come in the last 2 games. So we could be accused of recency bias here, Sam. And while Anderson Lopez has definitely had his moments, I don't think he's jumped in enough moats this season. Sugino can be flashy, can make the flashy saves, but ultimately Sapporo's defensive record isn't great. I mean, that it could also be a commentary on the defenders in front of him, of course. But I think we're going to have to give it to Fukumori, aren't we? And you've sung his praises already in this episode. But I think his delivery from wide areas and from deep and from set pieces is hugely important for Sapporo. And his overall play just about shades it, I think, for him, doesn't it?
I think so. I think there is the argument to be made that defensively Sapporo haven't been good enough, and you could maybe argue that Fukumori's defensive ability has not quite been there this season, but I just think what he gives to them as kind of a quarterback in that Sapporo team, he just is passing from deep. I don't think there are many, or if any, better players in the league at just pinging those 40, 50-yard passes out. His delivery from set pieces is so crucial. It's always on the money. And when you've got players like Anderson Lopez or Jay Bothwood, those sorts of targets you have to aim for, to have someone of Fukumori's quality with the delivery is so important. So, yeah, I think he's had better seasons than this, but then again, Sapporo have had better seasons. So, yeah, my money would be with Fukumori. I just think, yeah, terrific player to watch. I think the other players, I mean, Sugino did well. I think he came into the side with Gusungu having to go back to Korea. He went to Daegu. So it wasn't really certain who was going to take the gloves, because they brought in the Thai goalkeeper, Kavin, but he not really had a look. And Sugino was played very well. He makes the saves. He can be a little erratic at times, but I think generally he's played well. He's just left horribly exposed by the Sapporo, like the manner of which Sapporo play under Petrovic. So I think he's had a decent season, but maybe not enough for the player of the year. And Anderson Lopez, yeah, not enough moats for me, as you said. So yeah, I think Fukumori, I think he wins it. I think we can get back on the same page now.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. I mean, Sugino's, he's an interesting story, isn't he? Obviously, he played so long for Kashiwa and then was ousted by Scott McIntyre's boyfriend, Kosuke Nakamura. And when he went down to J2 with Kyoto, I guess we wondered if we would see him back in the top flight. But, he joined Sapporo at the start of 2018. Very much playing second fiddle to Gu Seung-yoon. But then once he's headed back to South Korea, there was a job up for grabs, and he's taken it. And as I say, I mean, he's done well at times and made some highlight reel saves. There's no question, Sugino. But I know he's Fukumori's one of your favourites, Sam. So absolutely no problems at all to award the JTalk Player of the Season for Sapporo to Akito Fukumori. The last club we'll cover this week it's slightly a tricky decision, Sam. It's Vissel Kobe, who have endured another rough season in the league, of course, as we thought they were going to be putting most of their eggs in the ACL basket, but then the ACL never really happened, so they just kind of sleepwalked through another campaign and sit in 12th. Having played 33 games, and it's likely that Sapporo will pass them, and goodness knows that Tosu might even pass them before the end of the season. So we've got three names, and they're three very well-known players, and they're three, they're absolutely outstanding. And it's a somewhat difficult choice, especially because Andres Iniesta is one of the greatest footballers of all time. Whenever he's involved, it's very difficult to look past him, of course. Iniesta, we wondered how much he'd get used this season in this condensed fixture list, but he has made 26 league appearances for Kobe in their 33 games, scoring 4 goals, although, of course, the goals are not what he's known for. One of the best passers, midfielders in the history of the game. Gotoku Sakai, I often struggle with his first name for some reason, 31 appearances for the fullback after he's returned from Germany. And the third name on our list is Kyogo Furuhashi, the flying forward, formerly of FC Gifu. Of course, he's Kobe's top scorer in the league this year with 12 goals from 29 appearances. So quite a difficult task to pick a name out of these three, Sam.
Yeah, really difficult, because I think Kobe are a team that need these three to all be playing well for them to turn up in a game. And really, this season, as well as these three have played, just the performances from Kobe are just so like half-hearted and wishy-washy and not really there, that it is difficult even to have picked the three players that we did. I think Iniesta, I think credit to him for the amount of football he's been able to play during this schedule. I thought he'd be missing a lot more games, but I think he only really had that one spell out with injury, and otherwise, he's done really well. I don't know what else you can say about Iniesta. He's just quality, but it doesn't necessarily have the players around him. I think Sakai is a very good left wing back. Yeah, I'm sure he can play right wing back as well, but Nishi's there, but yeah, his combination with Furuhashi and Iniesta going forward is usually a key outlet for them. Defensively, he's pretty decent compared to the shambles that can be to his right in that Kobe defence. And then, yeah, you can't go without saying Furuhashi. I think he's had a pretty similar season to last season. It's a difficult one for any player really to kick on, given the amount of games they've played. He's had moments where he's rested on the bench. He's had a couple of games where he's missed through injury, but he's still beaten last year's goal tally. He scored 12, is it, in 29? Yeah, it's a pretty good return for a left winger, and hopefully he goes on. He's already gone and scored in the ACL since the resumption in Qatar, so hopefully he can push on, help Kobe go far in that competition. So yeah, it is a really tough one. I think as much as Iniesta really needs this to kind of make him as a player and add this to the trophy cabinet, I think I'm going to keep Stuart Smith happy, and my vote will go with Kyogo Furuhashi.
Yeah, I can imagine Iniesta just absolutely heartbroken at this news. But, I'm going to have to agree with you, I think, Sam. He's made enough progress, I think, this year, Furuhashi. And, his goals have been so important to Kobe. And while Iniesta is unquestionably one of the best players of all time, he will have to go again next year if he wants to get a J-Talk Player of the Season award, because, it's unanimous. It's tight, but it's unanimous. And, Kyogo Furuhashi is the J-Talk Player of the Season from Vissel Kobe. All right, well, that is 7 clubs chalked off. And, some difficult decisions, but, don't worry, we're all friendly here at J-Talk Towers, so it's all good, and they're all honest opinions, so that's the most important thing. And, sorry again, Andres, but, try again next season, son. All right, so, there will be more clubs, featured in next week's episode, so I'm sure you can't wait for that, listeners. In the meantime, there is some J1 football to entertain you. Of course, we've already previewed what's going to happen in the ACL in the coming days. In J1, on Tuesday, Sendai host Kashiwa in their match day 26 fixture that was postponed after the COVID-19 outbreak at Raisol. Then over the weekend, the remaining 6 games from match day 31 will be played. Champions Kawasaki, however hungover they might be, will head to Shimizu on Saturday, and in the race for second and the ACL places, Gumba Osaka visits Shonan on Sunday, and Nagoya and Cerezo Osaka are also away at Kashiwa and Sapporo, respectively. Both of those games are on Saturday. So, Sam, the end is in sight. Some clubs only have two or three games left to play. Of course, the ACL clubs have fewer than that. So, we're just about there, mate. And I know you're obviously still going to be hugely busy in the coming days with the J1 and the ACL, of course. But, for this week, a slightly abridged version. We've managed to keep it under an hour and a half. So there you go. Miracles do happen and pigs do fly. Great to catch up with you, mate. And, thrash out some opinions on the players of the year. Always good fun. And, look forward to doing similar in next week's episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad we haven't fallen out. We've managed to keep things civil in our big Tosu debate. Yeah, so look forward to doing it again next week. It looks like we've got a few more difficult decisions coming up.
Most heavily. Who's going to get it for Kashiwa? Jeez, I don't know. All right, then. Well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk Podcast. Sam and I would like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. And, of course, we'd also like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to wrap up the week in J1 and the ACL. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.